This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Together we move fast, trying to grow up slow. Our hopes were high, our overhead was low. They all told me you weren't the only one I'd ever find. We had road ahead, miles behind.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Throwing my voice, reverberating off the four walls here in the vocal booth at Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, where the guitars hang on the wall, where the amps beckon from every corner of the room. Drums sit ready to be pounded to make the music that will change the world. Phil here. How you doing, everybody? Thrilled to be with you, as always, every week here on the podcast, here from Trinidad World Recording in Fort Worth, Texas. My, do we have a show for you today? Thanks for all your feedback from last week's show, all your questions. We need to get to some more fan mail questions. I've got them piling up here. Emails, questions, thoughts, gripes and complaints, all kinds of stuff. Send it all to phil@philpritchett.com. I love hearing from you, the fans out there. As I always say on this program, it's hard to gauge its impact, maybe, its reach, its value. It's a difficult thing. I sit here and talk about what's going on. I don't know if anyone's listening, really. I hear from you guys. I'm always astounded by people at shows saying, man, I listen to the podcast every week. Great. But for crying out loud, man, send me the emails. Let me know you're listening. Thanks so much. Oh, man, I'm getting a lot of mileage out of the Blueprint Garage Volume 3 CD. Now, of course, all you fans out there have no doubt already downloaded from iTunes or from p2tunes.com Blueprint Garage Volume 3. Well, a few weeks ago, we got the actual CDs in. I didn't want to wait to get the record out until the CDs were here. I just said, man, let's go ahead and put it online, let people have it. Then when the CDs come up, people who really want a CD too, or we're waiting for the CD, they can buy that. So last few shows and things, we've been selling CDs at the gigs, of course. You can get it on the website, p2merch.com. All the CDs are there. We're easy to find. But man, you know, we talk about how CDs have no value. And they don't, and they're on the way out. But I'm telling you what, in the car, man, all I've got is a CD player. I put Blueprint Garage CD in, taking the kids to school and stuff, you know, driving around town. And man, it's just something weird to see your 3-year-old closing his eyes and singing Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. To see your daughter clapping along to Psycho Killer, that kind of stuff, or clapping their hands, stomping their feet to a Dirty South. I kind of turn it down in some of the parts, you know, it's a PG-13 rated song, you know what I mean? So if you need that CD, you know, to play for the kids, it's a big hit. It's a big hit with my kids. It's kind of funny. Some of those. It's one of my little girls looked at me today, my 10-year-old. She goes, Dad, did all those people die on the boat? Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. I just look at her and say, yes, they did, honey. Yes, they all did. She said, is that a true story? I said, yes. I don't know. What am I going to do? Tell a lie to my own kid? Life is tough, man. You're not doing them any favors by sugarcoating the whole deal. I said, hey, that's what happens. It's a dangerous business out there on those boats, honey. Went down in the Great Lakes to an icy grave. Have a great day at school. You know, something like that. Her getting out of the car. Well, Talked about Lefsetz. God, he's always sending me good stuff here. Subscribe to the Lefsetz Letter, lefsetzletter.com. This sort of tied into the whole, getting Bin Laden thing in the music business. Leave it to Bob Lefsetz to tie these two things together in some way. But it's done very well. I was going to read most of this, man. It's kind of hard to paraphrase from it. So I'm going to hit a couple paragraphs here. Lefsetz, he's always going back to what matters today, where we're going, where we were in the music business, what's important now. And he's always kind of coming back there and highlighting these points. And, man, it's always very I find it very useful and very inspiring on a lot of levels. But he sends out his on Sunday, the May 8th. Sunday, May 8th, he sends out what it takes to make it today, what it takes to make it. You think you know what that is, don't you? Well, listen up. Lefsetz starts out. He's reading this article about the Navy SEALs, and they're talking about Hell Week, trying to become a Navy SEAL, the most elite fighters, you know. And one guy in the article said only 21 people in his class of 220 survived the test of Hell Week. What does it take to succeed? And this is what the guy said, and I'm quoting here. What kind of man makes it through Hell Week? This is, I'm quoting. That's hard to say, but I do know generally who won't make it. There are a dozen types that fail. The weightlifting meatheads who think that the size of their biceps is an indication of their strength. The kids covered in tattoos announcing to the world how tough they are. The preening leaders who don't want to get dirty. And the look-at-me former athletes who have always been told they're stars, but have never been pushed beyond the envelope of their talent to the core of their character. In short, those who fail are the ones who focus on the show. The vicious beauty of Hell Week is that you either survive or fail. You endure or you quit. You do or you do not. End quote. From a guy that got through Hell Week and became a Navy SEAL. That's good stuff, man. Great stuff. I got a big kick out of that quote, man. And then Lefsetz kind of parallels this to music today. He says, sounds like an audition for American Idol. That's taking the easy way out. The desire to strap yourself onto a rocket to the moon. Real stardom demands more. It's not a lucky break. It's all that preparation when no one is looking, you know, to be a great artist, musician, etc. Making it comes when you least expect it. When you've almost given up but are still slogging along on sheer adrenaline. It's all about character, much more than talent. And man, oh man, is he right. That is the whole shooting match. Of course, he says this in a lot of his emails. It's something I really have come to believe. It really is the character, man. It's just, I see it all the time, as you do in your own lives, fans out there, and whatever line of work you're in. You know, sometimes you're kind of like, hey, who's that guy that works for you? You know, he's not the sharpest tool in the shed. He's not this or that, or he didn't go to college. You know what? You're just thinking, look, he's the foreman for my lawn crew. He's here 10 minutes early every day, sober. You know, he busts his ass, and, you know, he's nice to his kids and his wife. That's the guy you want. That's character, man. Am I right or am I wrong? He's some guy with his resume and his 4.0 or something, but you know he's never really had a job. You're kind of like, well, why don't you hire this guy? He's got all that. You're like, man, what good is that to me? What good is that to me? But the character. So what else from this SEAL article? The Navy SEAL guy, he didn't give the guy's name, but the guy that made it goes on to say, and I'm quoting again here, talking about people who get into the SEALs who maybe aren't who you would suspect. He says, some men who seem impossibly weak at the beginning of SEAL training, men who puked on runs and had trouble with pull-ups, some of them made it. Some who were skinny and short, whose teeth chattered just looking at the ocean, also made it. Some men who were visibly afraid, sometimes to the point of shaking, some of them made it too. And Lefsetz follows that up by himself saying, you can't predict who's going to be a star. That beautiful girl with the fantastic pipes in high school, where is she today? Your buddy who could wail on the guitar, you know, where is he today? You know, Lefsetz just goes on to say, you know, to make it in music is like trying to become a Navy SEAL. And he says, I'm quoting, you've got to endure all kinds of horrific abuse. Oh, man. You think of just how many hotels and vans and stuff. Oh, geez. And you know what? Every band talks about that. I hear every band's horror stories. Everyone's got a bad gig. We stayed in this hotel once. We stayed in this van once. Blah, 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 blah. But a lot of times it's coming from a guy that's 22, 23, 24, 5 years old. And what I hate to tell him is, I'm still doing that. I'm almost 40 for crying out loud. I mean, it's like, man, you know that horrible gig you played? Yeah, you go do that about 2,000 times. Well, maybe not 2,000, but in total gigs. But you're probably talking, geez, 1 in 10 if you're playing, 100 nights a year. I mean, you're talking hundreds probably in just awful gigs. So that's kind of what this article's about, sticking it out. Leftist goes on to say, yeah, you've got to endure all kinds of horrific abuse when no one is watching. Are you going to flake out for the donut or hang in there? Used to be getting a record deal was like becoming a SEAL. The beginning. Now that doesn't even count. People wanting record deals are, wussies with a P. They want someone else to do all the work. Isn't that true? Sign a record deal. You want someone to make you a star. You want someone else to do all the work. Today, if you want to survive, you've got to do the work. It's a battle. Love it, man. Love it, love it, love it. Remember our old friend Kurt South? Oh, the podcast's own Kurt South. He never forgave leftists for being such a liberal. And dude, I'm with him on that. But even Kurt South would have condoned this article, man. Singing the praises of the Navy SEALs, toughness, what it takes to make it. He has this is another great little thought here. Once upon a time, promoters broke the act. Before consolidation, he's talking about, Live Nation and all these managers all becoming one big thing. Irving Azoff. Agents and managers were loyal. They used to be loyal. Now promoters are conglomerates focused on the bottom line. It's about anything but the music. Live Nation trumpeting the success of the Charlie Sheen tour? Would Bill Graham have promoted that? The old famous promoter. Money doesn't trump everything. Let's see you try to book another Charlie Sheen tour. In the old days, this is the quote I loved, in the old days the act started small and ended up big. Charlie Sheen and so many other shows start big and end up small. Isn't that so true? On some level, that's what's wrong with America. No one wants to do the hard work. And he concludes, but some do, and they're the ones who succeed. So all you guys out there, sleeping in your vans, believing in your music, recording, living in your car. Now, if you've only been doing that 1 or 2 years, big deal. That, you got to do it. You're going to have to do it another 10 years, maybe. Or if you had, maybe not. But if you had to, would you do it? Our old friend James McMurtry shows up in a lot of Leftist articles. Leftist goes to his gigs out there. He's a big fan of McMurtry's. Always talks about McMurtry just driving up in an old van, playing for 100 people, 200 people who love him and talking to him. And, McMurtry's famous quote to, I think he said on stage one night when Alexis was in the show, was at the show. He said, man, I was thinking, I'm going to get me a tour bus and a road manager to tune my guitars. And McMurtry just stopped for a minute and goes, but man, I've been saying that for 25 years. It gets tough, man, to bring those guys in and part with that. But he was just saying he always applauds McMurtry for his artistry. And most of all, kind of like that article's talking about, the SEALs and the journeyman musician. Man, those are the guys with something to say, with something to prove, with some experience to share, who have been out there, as we say here on the podcast, at the front fighting the battle. We're coming back with the news. That's what we're doing here on the podcast. It's good to know some out there like Leftists and all you great fans recognize it on some basic level. And as long as I think that y'all are out there, man, we're going to keep finding ways to get in the car. Gas might be $6 a gallon. I may not be able to have someone in the band might quit or something, but I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to get there. If I'm supposed to be there, I'm going to be there. I might have the flu. I don't know, but I'm going to get on stage and I'm going to do my best and leave it all out there. A long time ago, I realized that my happiness in this business all depended on how I went to sleep at night. In marriage, they say never go to bed angry. Same with music. You can't get up there and half-ass it through a gig. Like, oh, well, nobody cared. Or I didn't really feel like it. The crowd was small, so I didn't. You go to bed that night, at least I do, feeling guilty, feeling like you cheated them, cheated yourself. You can't do it. And the way to not go to bed angry is you get up there and you sweat out everything you've got, your vocal cords. You know, you cut your hands up, bleed everywhere till your legs, you jump around till your legs can't work very well, and you walk off the stage and you go to bed that night. And then, even if you didn't get paid, if everything sucked, you at least know it's not your fault. You know, that might sound kind of funny, but you can lay there in bed with the aches and pains and the sweat, and you can at least just go, hey, you know, I did the best I could. I gave it everything I had. Whereas if you don't, you'll never know where you stand. So don't pull any punches up there. The audience always knows, and most importantly, you do. That's my inspiring little thought for the day. I hope it's inspiring anyway. Who's going to show up in our next segment to come in here and talk on the podcast? Well, you just might have to wait around and see. Stay tuned.
I was thinking about her. I was thinking about my home. Nothing I could get without her could ever be called my own. 'Cause you've got nothing when you're alone. Yeah. The bells in the town steeple always ring on time, demanding the hours and minutes always stay in line. Visions of you rain through me when they start to chime. We've got road ahead, miles behind.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, a beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, enlightening your musical life. We have been out there at the front lines fighting the good fight every day, every weekend for the last 16 years or so. Now we're coming back to the canvas-covered tents in the woods, where all the colonels and generals sleep on cots, coming back with the news to tell them what's going on. That's what we're doing here on the podcast. Thrilled you're here with us today, as always. Well, we are joined by none other than your favorite bass player and mine in the universe, J.W. Blue, Marshall Blue. Blue is here. You're my boy Blue, as they yell out.
That's right. That's right. Good to be back.
A little old school reference. So thrilled you could come back here again this week. We were talking last week.
I had to know.
You had to know? I know. The whole chronology of events.
Not even the full band members know the whole story. This is a great treat for all the fans.
Well, we're just trying to set the record straight here a little bit. We were talking last week about the retirement of our beloved Stuart Wiley. Almost five-year drummer for the full band. Devoted father, parent, businessman, now moving on with his new life. He just doesn't want to go to the surf club anymore. Can you believe that? Or the firehouse, or drive up to Chicago. You know?
The blue light, all the staples.
The blue light, I mean, just come on, man. Rocking the house, fighting the good fight. He's like, man, he's got a business to run. But that got me talking about last week, Stu's involvement in the band. We're kind of thinking, man, where do we go from here? Do we get another kind of? We put the call out last week, in fact.
Right.
By the way, I've gotten those emails. Y'all send them, phil@philpritchard.com. If you are the next full band drummer, I got to know about it. phil@philpritchard.com. Say, hey, Phil, it's me. I'm a drummer. I'm your guy. I'll be on time, sober, and also I'm a pretty good drummer. That'd be great. We might be getting back in touch with you. So please holler at us. Thank you very much. But yeah, we started thinking about. You were asking after we finished our segment last week, like, man, how many, you know, who was the drummer before Stolle and Lynch and that whole era, you know, how many guys have played in your band? And
what time frames, road managers, in and out.
Yeah.
The great.
Oh, man, so many.
Blake Walker.
So many. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, let's see.
Let's start from the beginning.
You fans out there, let me
Should
just
we start
say
from
this.
The end and go backwards? or the beginning of Go Forwards. Which way is going to get us there?
I think we got to go chronologically forward.
Forward. Okay.
By going back to 1995.
Okay.
So fans, let me get some music here. You know,
back in time.
Back in time. This will answer all your questions, because right now you're thinking, man, back when I was in college, Phil had some dude on the drums playing left-handed. It wasn't Stu, but he did smoke. But he played this weird-looking drum kit. They're thinking, was it a dream? Was that Jason Stolle, and then he didn't have glasses? People are confused all the time.
Right.
They'll say, people still call you Ryan Lynch, man.
It happens.
It happens.
I just smile and nod.
I know.
Really? He's a good-looking guy, you know. Hey.
Confused with that handsome guy.
Ryan it is Lynch. My birthday. I'll take that birthday shot. Come on.
That's right. They bring you a Jaeger. Sure. Well, it all started out. I got out of college. Let's just go back to there. 1994.
Okay.
I was playing acoustic with James DeWitt. We had Romantic Embargo.
Of course.
Made a CD at Patrick McGuire Recording in Arlington, where my high school band had recorded.
Okay.
James and I were sort of a pre-Tenacious D kind of deal. I was the straight guy. He was the wild and crazy guy. But, man, I wrote on that first CD, Romantic Embargo, acoustic, Drink When I Think, which was written with a friend of mine, you know, Roland, Meet Me in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Some stuff like that. Some things that we would
come to
play still. So, but then I got married. See, this broke up a Romantic Embargo. My own marriage. See, everyone, show me a marriage.
We come full circle.
Where a marriage is born, a band dies. You heard it? Somebody, you know? Someone needs to write that on a wall down there in Austin somewhere, you know?
In the bathroom stall.
Yeah, just etch it above, etch it on the wall outside the Saxon Pub. Where a marriage is born, a band dies. Hey, that's as it should be, right? Oh, well, I mean, that's just how it goes. So I got married. I said, look, I'm only going to be taking orders and consulting with my wife on my future. So, you know, I'd been watching Ingram and these guys, Jack Ingram, and, you know, man, going playing fraternity parties and et cetera. So I call my old high school friend, Mark Baker, who by now is covered in tattoos.
Perfect.
But sort of a punk drummer guy, but a good drummer. And he was my high school band drummer. And he lived in Austin.
Perfect.
So it worked out well. And man, the first gig we had, we actually had Chris Holt played bass a little bit of sorta fame here in Dallas.
First bass player for the full band.
Well, he went to high school with us too. He's a year or two younger, and he had this little Paul McCartney style viola bass, just like we got over here. You're JC's
on the
bass.
Wall.
Yeah, he played. He knew some Beatles and stuff. We could play anything. Baker and me and Holt. Holt just played a couple things here and there, and I was a little bit out of college, and my old friends in college who were still in school said, "Hey, man, why don't you and your new band?" It was a new thing I was doing.
Right.
"Hey, why don't y'all come play at our fraternity party?" So I had Baker. And Holt can't make it all of a sudden. So I'm like, oh, my God.
Again, how full band members are.
Someone doesn't show up.
Lost and found.
Where one career dies, another is born.
That's right.
Maybe that's another. Write that in, on the Saxon wall, Saxon pub wall. So
he broke cardinal rule, man, number one.
What's that?
Showing up.
Yeah.
He didn't even show up.
Well, the gig was in Georgetown. He was in Dallas. And, you know, the traffic was bad. I don't know. Whatever. He couldn't make it. And so, I start a furious search. And this is like the day before the gig. And I've got the PA rented. And I just don't want to look like an idiot. I mean, right. We're hardly getting paid anything for this. And I'm not kidding you. That first, I remember this vividly. I called, you know, Austin's just musicians everywhere. So I start calling friends of mine. "Hey, you know, bass player? Yeah, call this guy. I call him. I can't do it, man. I can't do it, but call this guy. I can't do it, but call this guy." And, dude, I'm calling. I mean, it lead me right through. I talked to Jerry Jeff Walker's guy, Joe Ely's guy, Ian Moore's guy. I mean, just, you know, because in Austin, man, you pay a guy $100, I'll show up and play in nearby. So, and man, I go forever. And finally, one of them says, "Man, call Kevin Jecker. You know him?" I'm like, "I don't know who that is." He's like, "He's a nice guy, bass player. Call Kevin Jecker." So I call Kevin Jecker, and he just kind of goes, "Yeah, man, okay." And I mean, I. pre-internet. I didn't email him a file, didn't send him a CD.
Couldn't check him out on Facebook?
No, nothing.
Just, what's the guy look like?
Sight unseen. I just give him directions to the fraternity house. And I show up with Baker. Baker's like, well, as long as he just stays on the route note and stays out of the way, we'll be okay. And Jecker comes walking in. He's several years older than I am, but very, very calm and just quiet and just, hi, how you doing? I'm Kevin. And he comes in, and he's got a fretless bass. You'd appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what we did, man. We just kind of got through it. And made it pretty – I'd turn around and just kind of, hey, man, GC&D, follow me. Boom. And, man, we got right through it. So that was the first band. Me, Kevin, and now how long did
Kevin last?
That was probably – then we made Phil World. We went back to Patrick McGuire in 96, made Phil World. You know, Maria, Time Equals Distance, Luke Skywalker.
All the hits.
All the hits, man, the first album. So that was me and Bake and Kevin Jecker.
Right.
And then by a couple years later, Jecker left. He had a big family business. So Kevin Jecker moves away out of the band.
Married?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Married, oh, yeah. Kids. See, that was
married,
it.
The whole
thing.
All right.
That's sort of
just,
the underlying
just looking
theme
for one guy that didn't happen to, and I don't know if it's going to happen.
No, I don't think so. So
he's
Kevin
out,
Jecker
and Baker's still
on.
In?
Baker's still in.
Okay.
And no, that's not right. Baker leaves first. Look, I can't even remember this stuff. Baker leaves. He moves back to Dallas.
Okay.
So Kevin Jecker, the bass player, knows Keith Robinson, who's a really good player. He played in his old band with him. So Keith shows up. Keith went to Stephen F. Nacogdoches. He was in the drum corps. This guy can really play.
Okay.
And Keith was about Kevin's age. So these guys are, you know, 6 or 7 years older than I am. And good musicians. Mm-hmm. So Keith's very first gig is the recording of Phil Comes Alive.
Really?
Yes. We'd had some practices, I think.
Okay.
But so his first live show was me, Kevin, and Keith. See, man, all the guys' first gig is just a trial by fire. It's either at the studio, playing the gig,
yep,
live recording, sight unseen. This is how you find a real guy or you don't. So me, Kevin, and Keith did Phil Comes Alive. All those songs, and then shortly after that, Kevin left for his business, married.
Right.
And then
now Keith, the first iteration, was that Phil Pritchett and the full band, or when did that comes later?
That comes later.
Okay,
that
we'll get
later.
To it.
That comes later.
Fans want to know.
Blue.
Fans want to know.
Hang in there, Blue. Hang in there with me. That's coming. It's coming. Bless you all for listening out there if you hadn't changed the station already or gone back to something else. I just envision some of these guys who email me all the time just with their pencil, just drawing their tree, just get it down. I hope that's the case. I hope that's useful to some of you out there. Fun, nonetheless, to talk about. So then we do Phil Comes Alive. We make a lot of headway with that. Sell some CDs, Crystal Clear. Then, you know, Crystal Clear is a distributor, so we're in some record stores. We're going out and playing fraternity parties everywhere. Then Kevin leaves, and Keith just says, without a doubt, he goes, man, my friend Doug Holm is a bass player, and he'd be the perfect guy for this deal. Then, same deal. First Doug gig, sight unseen, we're playing. We play here in Fort Worth at Blue Bonnet. It's a little restaurant up here on the Circle by TCU with speakers on sticks, Keith on drums, me on guitar, and Holm shows up. He rides up with us from Austin. I think the car actually broke down that gig. And my mother-in-law came and picked us up. It was so embarrassing. We threw all the stuff in her
very professional
in her Ford Explorer. She's thinking, my daughter married this guy. And this is the kind of stuff that just happened all the time. So we make it to the gig, and Holm is playing bass. And, man, he does great with it. He's obviously listening. We had the CDs by then. We had Phil World and Phil Comes Alive. Hey, here's kind of the songs. So he did have the songs to listen to. And some old drunk cougar gal gets up there on the stage and is really dancing around, and Holmes just kind of bumping hips with her and having fun. And he'd been in a cover band, and all. I mean, he did a good job.
Had some stage presence.
Having fun and just not being a fuddy duddy about it. And he loves sports and everything, really easy to talk to. And so, Keith. Then we went on to make Suburban Legends. That's when we went to Nashville and recorded up there. Reed Easterwood, the weird eccentric guitar player guy, he played on that record, and Reed played with us some gigs shortly after that. And after Suburban Legends, we had so much of that steel and guitar on there. We had started.
So you were a four-piece.
Well, we started having some guitar guys in Austin play with us.
Really?
First was Reed was playing some. Then he left. And Keith was real big on that. He goes, man, we got to have a lead player. I just know, there's a bunch of guys around. They'll come play. And then we got.
And you weren't quite the lead player you are today.
Not really.
Then.
Yeah, no. I was much more just kind of rhythm. I was playing acoustic, you know, and electric some. But so Keith. Yeah, so we finally get Landis Armstrong, who is a great player. He's still down there.
Great name.
Great name. Landis Armstrong. His dad was Bob Armstrong, who was like the Attorney General of Texas, like way back in the day. If you go to a Matzel Rancho in Austin, they got the Bob Armstrong dip.
Also in Matito's in Dallas.
Bob Armstrong
Bob
dip?
Armstrong.
It's called the Bob Armstrong dip?
Kidding. Just queso with everything mixed
in. With a guacamole in the middle.
Guacamole,
like a scoop in the
sour
casement.
Cream.
Yes. That's the Bob Armstrong
dip. That's the Bob
dip.
Armstrong.
That is Landis' dad.
There it is.
Of course, in those days, he said, Landis used to tell me stories about his dad working for the government. He's like, of course, in that days, it'd be like my dad, the governor, and Willie Nelson. On top of a building on 6th Street, like shooting skeet off a building,
with
a shotgun. He goes, it was like...
That was the government.
The 60s and 70s in Austin. So anyway, he had a lot of great stories. Landis was amazing, guitar player. Then he started rotating in. He couldn't make a gig, so we'd have Andrew Nafziger, left-handed guy, plays with Bruce Robinson now.
Okay.
Great country player. We had a couple gigs with both of them. A couple gigs where we had
full band.
Nafziger, Landis, and me... And bass and drum. I mean, so we had some big shows, you know. So that was that late era. And then at this time, Keith Robinson, drummer, got offered the was the Marsha Ball gig that quickly turned into the Charlie Robinson gig when Charlie started taking off. So Keith left for that, and we got Landis. Landis said, "Hey, let's get this guy in my jazz band, Andrew Gerfers." So Gerf came aboard, left-handed,
right,
smoking. Gerfers, I'll never forget.
No beard,
but kind of a dude who liked he kind of rolled his own kind of guy, you know.
Oh, okay.
So I remember we went to the surf club the first time. Gerfers, we were sitting out at this cafe in a public place, and he takes out his papers and he's got his tobacco and he puts a little tobacco in there. Then he reaches into another bag and he puts another pinch or something in there.
Not tobacco.
Yeah, it just kind of rolls it up and lights it. I'm just kind of like, man, is that thing? You know, I was like, this is in Austin, dude. He's like, man, nobody cares, you know, and sure enough, nobody did, but it was. I thought that was kind of funny, that was the kind of guy he was, though, you know, and so that was the incarnation of that band, was kind of me, Gerfers, Nafziger, and Holm was still there. Holm
okay,
is.
Now at this point, have you had any road managers?
No road
not
managers.
Not to the road managers
well,
yet?
Well,
okay.
No, we do. We get into John Gray comes into the picture around this time. John Gray.
Sounds ominous.
He saw me playing Waco, big fan, big computer guy. Internet, since the internet, 98.
Starting to take off. Okay.
Well, before that. So
he
builds the first Phil Pritchett website, Gray. He goes, man, the whole thing's going to be email, internet.
Huge.
So he builds this cool-looking website and starts to mess with it. Of course, the domain names, like http://geocities/785. I mean, it's like forever long. / Phil Pritchett is like the last deal. But we whittle it down to philpritchett.com. John Gray was real instrumental. And he went on the road with us, sold T-shirts, designed T-shirts. He was a good designer. And he lived around the corner from me in Austin. So we would have meetings and
band meetings,
talk about merch and, you know, recording and stuff like that. So he sort of managed the band a bit.
And have you had merch all along, or did the merch
started to get the merch going? Yeah, we always had merch. We always had a few T-shirts, not a whole lot. So then I, just for fun, sort of make an album, Heritage Way, with Doug's friend Larry in Austin, who just had his home set up, just a computer, a couple microphones. And we did Heritage Way, and that's when I first started doing a lot of little keyboard. And interesting stuff like that. And none of the band really played on that. Gerfers came in and did drums on a couple songs. Just one mic over the drums and the den kind of deal.
And that was the first recording of Port Aransas?
Yes, Port Aransas on there. Beautiful Day.
Beautiful Day.
Got a lot of good songs.
Some good stuff
played
there.
I don't know, but kind of more mellow stuff. Then I moved to Nashville, and so that kind of blows things up a bit. But I'd still come back and play with everybody in that same incarnation of the band. That gets us to when I come back from Nashville – we get Troy Johnson was my booking agent then by this time.
Okay.
And Johnson starts booking dates. And when I come back from Nashville, he's like, man, we need to circle the wagons. We can't have these Austin guys.
A whole new.
We got to have new guys who live up here. And Lynch and Stolle. We knew Jason Stolle because he'd subbed some gigs on drums. And Lynch, who played with Corey Morrow, was looking to get back in the game. And so they said, hey, Phil's looking for a bass player and a drummer. So they came on board. And that's when the full band was
really
those
boring.
Guys were like, man, what are we, though, man? We're not Phil Pritch's backing band. And so I said, well, you know, it's, hey, Phil, you playing solo with the full bands? We, on Tougher Than the Rest, we did the full band, Phil Pritch and the full band. So that was that record. Then we did Cool and Unusual. Then we did High Tide in the Heartland with that incarnation. Then Lynch, married, gone.
Yep.
Stolle was married. Had a baby, then had another baby, and was like, that's it. So and had a good job, you know.
Right.
Johnson was and during the Stolle and Lynch deal, we also hired Jordan Powell, road manager extraordinaire, now
right.
Miranda Lambert, of course. And so that was a good 4 years there.
And where – and then where did Blake Walker fit into that?
At the end of Powell's reign.
Walker kind of took
Blake
over the reins
Walker.
For a year.
Yeah. We just enlisted him. So he, you know, he'd come on the road. He wasn't with us that long, you know, just several months. I don't know.
Yeah.
He'd fill in or go here and there if Powell couldn't make it. So, and then, we brought in Lynch started to not be able to go out of town. So we had Shane Hildreth in Houston, bass player.
Right.
Michael Terabay from Pat Green's band would play bass sometimes if he was around.
Yep.
And so that's kind of how it went for a long time. And Stolle was always the drummer. He was rock solid, man, for all those years.
The drummers were always.
Yeah. And then you started playing bass once Lynch couldn't do it. And then once Jason Stolle figured out that you were going to be in the band, he quit.
Never. Not he's really. Never liked me.
No, around that time, so Stolle, you know, me and Lynch and Stolle had a thing, you know, kind of. And when that kind of started to... It changes, you know, when someone leaves and it's not a good or a bad thing. It's just how it is.
I'm
kind of like, hey, something's lost and something's gained. It's kind of like that quote we wrote on the wall.
On the wall at Saxon Pub.
So that led us to you, me, and Stu.
Right.
And, man, it was like that for a long time, 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
And so who knows? The next drummer, the next chapter is out there. The next chapter is out there. Maybe it's already being written.
Maybe it is. Hopefully the next drummer is someone that I'll get along with.
That's right.
And
that's
I won't
right.
be out just 10 shows later. Just, I can't play with this
I
guy.
I can't stand this guy. I hope not either, Blue.
In 5 years from now, you'll be talking about me on the next podcast.
I hope for the sake of the band and all the fans and for me out there that you don't meet the love of your life here pretty soon.
That's right.
That's no good for anybody. You know what I mean? Well, that's a quick trip to the family tree of Phil Pritchard and the full band. Hope you enjoyed it, fam. Hope you found a little humor, a little perspective. You know, go back to those old Pritchett CDs. You can download every CD we've ever made at p2tunes.com for just $4 a piece. Or send me $20. I'll send you the drop card. You can just order it right off the website, p2merch.com. $20, I'll send you a card. Then you can go online and download the entire catalog for only $20. Something like 12, 13, 14 albums. Incredible. Thanks for being here today, Blue.
Love it.
Maybe we'll get you back here very, very soon. Coming up to the vault, we're going to do some more Paul McCartney. Next.
Give your heart to somebody soon.
am on. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, enlightening your musical life as we do so every week. From Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. How you doing, fans out there? How about old J.W. Marshall? Blue for dropping by, sharing his wisdom, sharing his thoughts on all things full band. Just taking a guided tour there through the full band family tree. So extensive. God, it's funny for me to sit there and think about all those albums and guys I played with, and you know, some of which I keep up with, the majority of which I still keep up with, the guys we played with a lot anyway. Man, we got to do another segment at some point, because behind every new guy in the band, this guy played drums or bass, there's about 12 offshoots of just dudes who subbed in a gig here and there. All kinds of characters, man, just all over the map. Everything from Matt Medeiros, Roger Craiger's drummer, you know, emergency, you know, sitting in and playing a set with us at some festival, to, you know, the guitarist Josh Owen strapping on a bass when Blue's airplane didn't make it to Houston and playing a gig, all kinds of stuff like that. Well, as we did last week, we're going to talk about Sir Paul McCartney, because all of y'all are such big Beatles fans out there, right? Oh, I know. Well, man, did you see McCartney's getting married or something? He's engaged again. Goodness gracious, doesn't this guy ever learn? Oh, he had such a great deal with his first wife. Bless her heart, Linda. She left us all too early years ago, and ever since then, he's bounced around on the dating scene out there. Uncle Paul, well, we wish him the best. Well, he had it going right on this record. This is from Ram, Paul McCartney's great solo record. It's actually credited to Paul McCartney and Paul and Linda McCartney is how it's listed. At least I've seen it that way. This is the lead-in track, man. Just a wailing, rockin' tune here. Too many people. Ram McCartney.
Thank you.
Too many people. Oh, that's rocking stuff. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Well, it's with a bit of sadness. We got Ram on today. McCartney's great solo record. I was holding it out for Stuart Wiley. He wanted to come in and do some Paul McCartney, but Stu, we're moving on without you here, man. Oh, it makes me tremendously sad. But rest assured, we're going to get Stu Wiley come in here to reflect, looking back on his days with the full band, and maybe see, you know, if he could do these Paul McCartney records justice by talking about them, as he has so often wanted to do in the van for all those years. Well, leave it to old Paul to do a little country kind of ditty here. Not really country, but about living in the country. McCartney always had a he had that little ranch up there in Scotland where he'd go up and drink and hang out with the family when he wanted to be depressed for a while. But, you know, making those homemade recordings up there after the Beatles broke up, we talked about last week. Love this little song here, man. Golly, if somebody walked in here and played this song as their new tune, I'd fall down on the store on the floor and start crying. Heart of the Country, Paul McCartney.
I look high, I look low, I'm looking everywhere I go. Looking for a home in the heart of the country.
There he is, Uncle Paul McCartney, my Uncle Paul. I call him my Uncle Paul because I grew up, you know, when I was a teenager, I had more pictures of McCartney and the Beatles in my room, probably more so than my own family members and stuff. Isn't that sad? You know, I probably knew more about his life and upbringing and stuff like that, more than I would know some of my own cousins or uncles or something like that. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I was like, man, you know, the Beatles, I've been watching them grow up. Kind of like my old uncles. I got pictures of him all over the house. And there he is, Uncle Paul. Well, we wish him good luck here with his third marriage. I don't know. I don't know much about the girl. I don't know. She hasn't met the family. Who knows? But we wish him all the best of luck. Rest assured, he left the world a gift, not only with the Beatles, but with some of his great solo work. And maybe I want to tackle some of his Wings stuff later on. Kind of some overlooked stuff on a lot of those Wings album. In fact, I ran into, what was that guy's name? He's a great Denton musician, drummer. We were hanging out at a show, and he just goes, man, Wings is one of my favorite bands ever. Just Wings, Paul McCartney and Wings. Really good pop orchestrations, man, and groovy tunes. Band on the Run, great album. Maybe take a look at that here in the coming weeks. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening here today, enjoying some Paul McCartney, and enjoying Blue J.W. Marshall for dropping by. Know that you can go to philpritchett.com for all your full band needs. Book the band, 817-733-5256, or call that same number, to come record in the studio, just as so many of you have. Or if you've recorded a record and it just doesn't have that little extra shine to it, that little organ part, harmony, guitar, drop that hard drive, a little hard drive in the padded envelope, send it here to Trinidad, man. I'll mix and master the whole thing for you. Add some background vocals, organs, guitars, harmonies, percussion, whatever. Anything I can possibly pass off as being decent, we'll put it on there and make it sound great for you. It's what we do here at Trinidad. Well, folks, we will see you again next week here on the P2 Podcast. Thanks so much for listening to us out there, for joining us every week. Send all your comments to phil@philpritchard.com. We'll see you next week. We're going to leave you with some more McCartney here. Three legs. Much tougher.
Well, when I walk, love me still. A dog is here. My dog, he got three legs, but he can't run. But mine got one. But he can't run.